Hello and welcome to episode 8 of A View from the Dugout with myself, Chris, from Surrey on the Budget. And I'm joined by my co-host, a man who very recently applied for Britain's Got Talent, but was rejected on the basis that doing a helicopter wasn't PG friendly. It's Russ from Scotland Surrey. Russ, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm rather dejected after this latest claim to fame. Holy smoke, I'm fair falling down the pecking order of good things happening to me, am I?
Well, I mean, it's at least you got through to the decision stage. But I mean, I suppose in the grander scheme of things, you know, doing a helicopter probably isn't PG, and it's one of those things that, you know, if that was on, you know, prime time Saturday night viewing, it's a fall from grace from the Knowles house party days to Rush doing a helicopter. So, without further ado, as we just usually go into our usual kind of game week kind of thing. But before we do that, I thought last week we kind of talked a little bit about World Cups just off the basis of Russ's last claim to fame of the Diana Ross penalty kick situation. So at the weekend there, I was at the Dundee-Livingston game. That was through in Livingston. Away days are always different. Usually it's drunken fans. It was a 12 o'clock kickoff, but some of them were still clearly drunken fans. And there was a fair bit of, you know, random chants and atmosphere at the game, and I just thought we'd kind of just have a wee bit of chat about football in general, because I think that kind of gets lost sometimes. I mean, everybody that's playing this game is a football fan, I would imagine, and for me, when it comes to supporters' chants and atmospheres and things, you know, away days quite often are better than home games, just because of that. You know, people are, you know, half cut and they're having a good time and what have you. And there was a chant on Sunday that really kind of spurred this. And I'll come to that chant in a moment. But have you any kind of memories of great atmospheres at away games, or even, you know, if we could probably include national games in it as well?
Yeah, just I suppose for me the greatest ever game I attended was 1997. Scotland versus Latvia, October. It was the last game of the France 98 World Cup qualifying. And Scotland, the national stadium was actually undergoing renovation. So the game was actually played at Celtic Park.
All right, yeah, yeah.
So the Scotland team, you know, just, you know, that you were lining up with guys like Kevin Gallagher, Gordon Jury, Lambert, Billy McKinley, John Collins. They were all still in the team. You know, really, really good players. And on the same day, England were over in Rome playing Italy. So basically England and Italy were a point separated. And an Italy win would mean that England would have to go to the playoffs. Scotland were, all they had to do basically was pick up a point and they would be assured of the sort of the second best, the second placed teams, the best ones qualified. And Scotland were already pretty much assured of that. They just basically had to turn up. We won that day. Now, there was I think there would have been a crowd of about, I think it was about 66,000. And I remember the Guinness Book of Records actually put for the loudest decibels at a football match. So you can imagine, you know, England at the time playing over, and there was, you know, a lot of rivalry, a lot of Italia chants around the Scotland fans. But yeah, it was an amazing day. Kevin Gallagher puts in front early doors. Gordon Jury got the second. And of course, with, you know, 5 minutes to go, I think it was Christian Vieri almost scored for Italy, which, as you can imagine, the stadium was absolutely bouncing. So certainly, as far as atmospheres go, fantastic. That was one that kind of springs to mind. A few of the chants just off the top of my head. You know, Newcastle United are loosely my English team, as you know. So the Peter Reid Monkey's Heed chant was always a good one. So apologies to any Sunderland fans that end up potentially listening to the pod. But yeah, that was one that I was quite taken aback with when I heard for the first time, when I did actually go to St James's. Gary Harkins of Dundee, obviously, when he played against United, your belly's offside chant was used quite a lot when he kept running offside. So those are the two probably sort of chants that from real football. However, my favourite chant, and if any of our younger listeners haven't heard this, the 1995 film ID had the iconic Shadwell Towns. So, of course, this is a film about sort of football hooligans, undercover cops and things like that.
With half the cast of EastEnders in it.
Yeah,
cast of EastEnders is in it.
Yeah, EastEnders cast. they end up in EastEnders as opposed to, you know, it's a bit of a fall from grace. But this is a sort of mid-90s football casual film, and it was fantastic. And I remember me and all the lads and stuff, you know, watched it. I mean, we'd watch it, you know, you could watch it 6-7 times without failing. Of course, they had the "We are Shadwell, the kennel is our place, you know, Shadwell never shall ever lose face." So of course we would sing this in the pubs and stuff, like Ben and things, you know. It was really, really sad and pathetic, to be honest. But yeah, it was just these sort of things that you remember from being sort of integrated into football. So that's my ones before we go into game.
Who in your pub group would have been the one you'd have said, "I bloody love you, Gambo"? Which one would have been that guy?
Yeah, do you know what, I would say that we definitely had a couple of gumbos in our I'll not absolutely publicly embarrass anybody.
So we're not even being PC, let alone PG today. So on that basis, in terms of atmosphere, funnily enough, I'm going with a Scotland game too. And it was the playoffs for Euro 2004. And it was Scotland versus the Netherlands. And I wasn't even supposed to be at the game. My missus at the time and her pal actually queued overnight in the outside Morrison's in Arbroath to get tickets for the game. And it was something came up and our pal couldn't go. So all of a sudden I got a ticket that I hadn't queued for or anything. And I got to go to the game. And that was the game, if you remember, James McFadden scored right on half time. And I have never been at a game in my life where the half-time chanting and singing was anything like, you know, was anything like that. It was stunning. There's actually a video. I managed to find a video on YouTube of that. I'll try and share it on my social. And it was just something else. It was actually from the Dutch end that the video was from. And it was all the Loch Lomans. They had the Braveheart speech and had, you know, every Scottish song you could think. The Proclaimers were on. Oh my God, I'm getting goosebumps even thinking about it. What an atmosphere. And that was when Dick Advocaat was the manager. And it was, he's bald, he's fat, he's going to get the sack. It's Advocaat. I was getting chanted around the ground. And then on the Wednesday night, we got rattled 6-0.
6-0.
And that was the end. I got absolutely blazing that night. Everybody else went to be home. And I was like, no, I'm staying to the end. And I stayed in the pub and I was drinking shot after shot after shot. I slept in the bath that night. Not even the bathroom, the bath. Because I was so sick. I couldn't make it out of the bathroom. And I climbed in the bath and went to sleep there. I woke up about 10 o'clock the next morning, missed my work and everything. So that was that one. But on Sunday, there was a chant. Now, this one's not PG, so if you've got kids listening, skip forward about, you know, a minute or so. But there's a new group in the Dundee fans. There's a, you know, they called themselves the Southeast Section. Group of young lads that are basically, you know, they've got a drum. They're one of these groups that have got a drum now. But God, it created an atmosphere on Tuesday night. And they were there. They'd obviously been on it. And they were chanting for all our players. And one that's become a real cult hero, because he was a player of the year at the awards at the weekend. That was Ryan Sweeney. It's one that I've had in my gallery. He helped me get, you know, cards. You know, helped me get towards a card last week anyway. But he won the player of the year for most of the supporters clubs. And all of a sudden, they started chanting to the song of "Let's All Do the Conga." It was "Do Do Do Sweeney's Cock is Massive," and this became a song. And unfortunately, you know, it's one of these weird things about football. It's the only place you could go really and chant about another man as a fully heterosexual man. Not that there's any problem if you're not heterosexual, couldn't give a monkey's either way. But to go and chant about other men in such a fashion amongst other men who are chanting about the male appendage of one of the players is quite something. And that was just one of those that just came out of nowhere, and it was just hilarious. I was actually laughing, but unfortunately it's got stuck in my head now. So, and the other one is, you know, is again at Christmas time, and you know, every team's got their songs and what have you. United have got so many songs that are actually, you know, real songs that they kind of adopted as their own. And yeah, there's The Last Christmas, Wham, the song. And it was, you know, Last Christmas I Gave You My Heart. And this year, to save me from tears, we're giving it to Luke McCowan, was the chant over the festive period, because Luke McCowan of Dundee was in a fair bit of form. So I just think it was just something that popped up in my mind from that chant on Sunday. And it was just something. And I just fancied a wee bit of football chat before we even got anywhere near our severe stuff, because it was a mixed bag for the two of us. So I thought maybe if we start off on a really positive, I mean, there's obviously been so many over the years, so many inappropriate ones, probably shouldn't make it into the podcast. But I think some of those, yeah, and it's always, it's, do you know what? It's part of the being a football fan, especially the away days. I'm going to try and get to some more next season, but man, it's fun.
Do you know what? I think you're right. And before we go on to talking about all things surreal and the depression from the DNP surprise game weeks, do you know what? One final chant, and I always remember, and I didn't witness this one, but I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And it was when Frank Leboeuf was at Chelsea. And I think there was a row of kids or something like that in the front row, and there was this guy, I think, and he picked up on him always swearing, and you know, into the match atmosphere. And this guy, and I think Frank Leboeuf went over, I believe, I think, and told him to, like, shh, you know.
Yeah.
And the next thing, the whole, was, he's here, he's there, we're not allowed to swear, Frank Leboeuf. And it was just brilliant, you know. So on that note, shall we look at what the aftermath of what was a very bizarre, I think, for so many leagues, and, you know, just the amount of DNPs and social media, Twitter and you know, in particular, was just a mess of DNPs, wrecking so many well-known sort of social media accounts and things like that are all playing the game. But I just seen it was just everywhere. It was just a disaster, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, it's obviously being the end of the season, there was a fair bit of rotation from some of the teams. And if you got five players in your team and they all played, you know, I was pretty lucky. But it was really one of those weeks where it was fully feast or famine. There was little in between. It was either, I mean, if you looked at Asia, you know, scores in the 400s were barely getting cards. And then you go to the other end where, you know, teams were rotating goalkeepers out. They were rotating, you know, players out left, right and centre. And I mean, it happens at the end of a lot of seasons where teams have got nothing to play for. They give some of the squad players games. And that really came into effect, even in terms of the high scores. Now, I was at the Dundee game. I had, going into that game, I had two players that played pretty well for my specialist team, my goalkeeper, Makewa, and Tsukasa Morishima from Hiroshima. They'd both scored pretty well. I think I had 130 odd points from the two of them. So I'm at the game and I look at my phone because I've got the notifications on, and here's Paul McGinn doing his usual kind of hammering in his AA and also then scoring and assisting. And I'm like, Jesus, this is going pretty well. I'm like, if I get something from one of these two players that I've still got in, the two Dundee players, I had Josh Mulligan and Zach Rutten. I was like, something from one of these and I'm going to hit a big card here. And Josh Mulligan scores a header. And I went berserk because I'd seen that Zach Rutten had the ball before the cross came over. And I didn't see who crossed it. And I thought it was him. So I thought I had a goal and an assist. So Christian's beside me and he got walloped in the back. I was like, it's fucking Josh Mulligan scored. Going crazy. And then I realised it was Jordan Marshall with the assist. And I was like, okay. And then I looked at my score and I was on 339 points. And I was like, right, okay. I remember from the podcast last week, 317 was all you needed for a rare card. So I was like, Jesus, I'm looking pretty decent here for getting a card. And I was 15th at that point. And then obviously there were still games to go. But then I started to drop down. And then I got opted 8 points in total. I went from 339 to 331.6. And I finished outside the rare cards by 1.1 points. So I was a wee bit gutted. And then I got the rewards yesterday. I did the little sneaky trick. And if you don't know what the sneaky trick is, I'm not telling you. You know, we don't want to spoil Christmas for you. But if you know the sneaky trick, you can go and check what player you're getting. And I'd seen who it was. And I was like, Lewis Morgan, happy days. And I went and had a look at his value. I was like, okay, 60 quid. I can't grumble because that's more than my four outfield players cost. It was only the goalkeeper that cost more than that. So I was like, well, that's, you know, it's a great return. I'm happy with that. And then last night I was sitting there and I went on Surreal Data and I was looking at the rewards section and I was scrolling through and I happened to notice that it had, you know, the 3-day value or what have you of the players. And it was the highest one of the tier twos, even though I was six places into the tier twos. So five people who finished above me got less reward than I did. Now, it was probably because a mixture of some of those were European cars that are now coming to the end, but I got lucky. I got, you know, a 2022 America car that's, you know, still in action. And he's got the Scotland badge against him, so, or Scotland flag against him. So happy days. I was delighted with that. But yeah, no, that was my game week. And then on the converse, it was the same thing I talked about last week. Alan Forrest, who was in my All-Star team, came off the bench for Livingston, scored and got an assist. Dundee lose 2-1. But hey, push me through the threshold. So it was that thing again where I was like, oh, I'm not going to celebrate this one too much. I mean, it was a dead game. Made no difference. We were relegated anyway. But yeah, it was happy days on that one. So I got some ETH and I got a decent value player. So I was, all in all, I came away with under 100 quid, but maybe 85, 90 quid's worth. And I can't grumble at that when I consider it was, as you know, a limited team that got me the vast majority of that. So I know that your week was obviously one of those that was decimated by DNPs, Russ.
Yeah, just I think just like so many people, the rotation really killed it. I just look and just, you know, just five bullet points I've got written down here. So my challenger team was destroyed by Julian Weigl at Benfica, not playing. Yeah. Yusuf Yazici, who I believe CSKA Moscow have not taken up the 11 million option to buy, which is absolutely bonkers considering he's been banging in the goals for them. I don't have much context around that. I've just seen that basically about an hour before the recording the pod. However, his DNP cost me a card in All-Star. Franco Servi at Celta Vigo, who has been backing for him, scoring really high green scores again. He cost me a card in Champion. Limited Camavinga card cost me in the All-Star there. He didn't play. And then my under-23 goalkeeper, Gaetan Kuki, was dropped in the Mechelen game. So five sort of key cards. None of those cards, you know, are, you know, sort of like low value. They're all what you would, you know, class as, you know, quite expensive cards, or certainly I think they are to me anyway. And yeah, five, basically, I think I would have realistically had possibly two, maybe three cards from that. So to get none was a little bit disheartening. However, on a sort of positive observation note for guys looking for cards, the possibility of a Dundee United stack, I would say, and obviously I know that I'm, you know, I know that I'm going to be biased because they're my team, but, you know, Charlie Mulgrew scored 91, Ryan Edwards got, I think, 77 at the weekend.
Just now.
Yeah, Ross Graham is an under 23 card. These guys are looking really good for when United win and keep a, you know, potentially keep a clean sheet. A couple of other cards that I noticed that had quite good weeks. So Juan Cuadrado seems to be back playing. I had the super rare Nicky Clark getting his debut, and he obviously scored the two goals. So thank you, Nicky. Unfortunately, I messed the rest of the selection up, but so didn't get any cards.
Can I just quickly tell you my Nicky Clark story? He wasn't eligible for the specialist league for me because I needed one that was under 40 for his average. So when the game week was still open, he was 41. When the game week closed, he'd went down to 40. Now he's up to 43, I think he is. Had he been available and I used him instead of Zach Rudden, I would have won the specialist league.
You would have won a card.
No. I'd have won the specialist league.
Oh, right, really? Right, yeah, okay.
That's the difference. It was 50 points of a difference. And I was 48 points off first place, and he was 51 points more than Zach Rudden did. So had I been able to play him, that's the difference. And you know, one simple change.
You know what? I think out with, obviously, the, you know, the Rangers cards that should, I would think, arrive at some point sort of imminently before the new season starts, and the obvious Celtic you know, cards out there that are providing a lot of guys with stacks cards at the moment. Now, this season's over, but, you know, out with that, you've got Dundee United and Hearts cards that I would think should be relatively good value. And I know that Motherwell are also in Europe. However, I think their squad's in a little bit of transition, and I'm not sure how many of their cards. There's two or three key cards, you know, Kelly, Van Veen, maybe Slattery, etc. And Stephen O'Donnell seems to be scoring really well, actually, when he plays. Yeah, so there's a few cards there, but I think certainly Dundee United cards look really good value. They're not what I would class as particularly expensive in the rare market at the moment. I've been doing a lot of the scouting, and as I mentioned on last week's podcast, I've been doing a gallery overhaul. I think I've seen 15 players of more than 0.1 leave my gallery in the last 7 days. And, you know, anybody that fires into my gallery, you'll see that I've got, you know, I've got new keepers, I've got some new players, and I've come up with a little bit of a, I'm going to go all out for limited for the All-Star next season. Not so much, you know, the lottery of underdog probably doesn't appeal to me too much. The prizes do, but, you know, I think you're going to have, there's a huge slice of luck in there. Mm-hmm. However, for the All-Star limited, I am now going to put in what I would class as quite a strong team. And I think that the three main components, I now have two of them at the club, but my three main components of that next season are going to be Callum McGregor, based on the fact that he very rarely misses a game. And obviously he's going to have midweek utility as well as weekend. Carlos Soler, and that's based on the fact that if he remains at Valencia, he's, you know, he's on everything. He's on free kicks, pens, you name it. So the opportunity for him to get decisives is really high. However, also if he moves, I think we might see an even better Carlos Soler, which could be quite exciting. And the third card, I'm going to spearhead the sort of the limited team with Ciro Immobile at Lazio. Mm-hmm. So that's it. You know, I'm going to look at that as sort of being my three. I probably will do an element of, you know, I've got guys like Hermoso, Atletico Madrid, and I've got a few of the United sort of defensive cards and things that I might be quite tempted to see how they roll with. But yeah, I'm gonna give that a whirl next season and see how it goes.
Good. Yeah, it sounds good. I mean, I've got a wee plan in the back of my head just now about trying to get an under 23 limited team pulled together, and I'm going to try and do it primarily with Scottish players, to be honest. And I was thinking about doing it with the rare, but I just can't even come close to affording a goalkeeper. So it's, unless when it comes to the start of the season and Ross Laidlaw's dropped and Ross Munro plays, mm-hmm. that might be a way that I maybe think about doing it. But as it stands, there's no way I can afford an under 23. So what I was looking at was probably sticking around some of the, you mentioned Ross Graham and Connor Barron. There's also Jack McKenzie.
Yeah.
And who was the striker I was looking at the other night? I can't remember off the top of my head. It's been a long day at work, folks. Midwife appointments this morning and all this jazz. So I'm trying to remember off the top of my head who the forward was, and I can't. But and then my goalkeeper looking like probably your boy Cook from Mechelen, just because of his price. And I mean, at the moment, you can actually pick him up for, it was 0.08 as a limited. Now, that's quite a lot to tie up in a goalkeeper, but I still think there might be a little bit still to come off that yet, because you could see some of the goalkeepers in Scotland are coming in at 0.025, but the Americas and the Japanese goalkeepers just now are in the 0.08s. So you know that if you pick up a couple of decent goalkeepers, like I've got Xander Clark there, and I know fine well he's sitting on the market just now at 0.021 or something like that. So you're talking under 40 quid for what is going to be a starting goalkeeper probably at Dundee United. So that's bonkers. If you can't, if you've got a spare ETH and you could pick up a couple of cheap goalkeepers, you know you're almost guaranteed to be doubling your money on that card in 6 weeks' time. And I just, once I start getting my free ETH, I've got a list of players that I'm wanting to work my way through. But that was definitely one of them. But that was one of the plans I had. Obviously, over the summer, I don't have an all-star team, a rare one. I have no threshold team whatsoever going in. I've basically invested, as I said on the pod last week, I've invested all my players or all my money into European cards. I'm sitting with 23, I think it is 22, 23 European cards now, and I'm not going to keep them all. I'm probably going to keep about 15 of them. So there's probably going to be 7, 8, hopefully by the time I get it round to 10 cards that I fully intend on selling, withdrawing some money and then reinvesting. So that's, you know, we've made no bones about what we're, you know, what we're both about in terms of trying to make some extra money. So yeah, that's where I'm looking at for that. And the rest of it's going to probably be the same. I'm just trying to find it. I feel like I sent you what players I was looking at, and I'm scrolling back over messages, but I can't see it. So To hell with
I probably just ignored you.
Yeah, probably did. And I can't remember myself. But yeah, so the game week's mixed bag. And I'm going to harp on about it. Specialist, my favourite. And, 86th, I'll take that. And I'll take a card worth that money. So moving on to a wee bit of Serrer news before we kind of kick on to anything else. Last week, we were remiss in mentioning the baseball launch that Serrer mentioned. I'm not going to go too deep into it. Personally, I think, it's what they've opened their America office for. If you think otherwise, you're deluded. They were trying to break into the America market, which, as we've said, the American fantasy sport market is monstrous. And I think I think that'll end up being a successful market. People from the football model not really understanding what the American model is going to look like for baseball. It's going to look completely different. People going on, there's not going to be thresholds and you're not going to get threshold payments. Of course you're not. It's going to be a different game. It's not the same game. Golf's going to be different when that comes along. It's not the same game. They're all going to have their own scoring mechanisms, their own prize payouts and things like that. Get out of your heads that things all have to be the same because they don't. The basic model will be, but payouts and things like that are going to be different. So for me, I don't think it's going to interfere with the football side of it at all because I still think that's going to be mainly what the French office are looking at. But I think the American office, when that was opened up with the basis of we're going to break into America. Otherwise, why would you open an office in America? There's no point to doing it. I don't know you think about the whole baseball launch.
Certainly, there was a lot of key appointments, let's say, to the team over the last 6-9 months that have got quite a sort of influential status, I think, in the American market.
Yeah.
We've kind of seen that with guys coming in and helping certainly probably on the football model. One of the things that I've seen, and I agree with a lot of people on the social media, I really would like, before they go and roll out the baseball, them to fix as much of the sort of things that have been irking the sort of the football community as such. So I would like to see many of these things fixed so that we're at a sort of 90-95% sort of perfect product as such in relation to the football, so that it just means that guys don't have to keep changing and chopping and changing and adapting. And I think we're now needing to be at that point where everybody knows what they have to do. I think one of the key things there was the removal of the common goalkeepers, obviously, in SO5. So Do you know what, they've got that out of the way, they've given everybody plenty notice, people can now make up their minds, I'm going to stay in the game, no I'm not, I'm going to leave and I'm going to sell up, or I'm going to just become a trader, or do you know what, I don't think I can afford this in the rares. I'm going to jump into the limiteds where I can actually put in 2 or 3 teams. So I think Serrer, to be fair to them, have made that quite clear and have given what you would arguably say 3 months' notice, which I think that's a pretty fair time period. I obviously seen that we very briefly touched on the fact that they'd been working with, I think it was the PGA, and I'm guessing they'll have to align themselves with the RNA, the Royal and Ancient, which is obviously the Scottish-based home of golf. I'm guessing there'll be some work to do in relation to tie-ins there for the golf.
Yeah.
The baseball, I don't know an awful lot. It's one of these sports I'm not going to pretend I know next to nothing about it. I think I know three teams' names. I know the Yankees because we've got a mutual friend that he watches them religiously, and he watches all their games, and it's all he ever posts on Twitter. And I think I know the Mets, and is it the Red Sox? And that's it. I couldn't tell you if someone put a briefcase with £500,000 on the table right now and said, name me 2 baseball players. I couldn't. I genuinely couldn't. It's a sport I know nothing about. Yeah. But they've got the link all over the website. Have I signed up yet? In truth, no, I've not. Will I? Probably. I'll probably look at it, suss it out. And I will be one of these players that I'm guessing there'll be loads, obviously, that play Serrer that, I'm not going, for the use of an expression, I'm not going balls deep into football knowledge and scouting and things. I'm just going to play the game for enjoyment. Well, I might look at that and do that with the with the baseball, but my knowledge isn't there. So for me, the main thing, we're not looking to start introducing any sort of baseball or anything like that in relation to the pod. It's probably good to have an awareness. It might be nice for all the guys that are playing just now and just before people discard it or discount it, there's an untapped market over there, and this could be a chance for people that know some of the ways of the working of the company to become maybe, you know, early adopters with maybe a minimal investment. So that purely from a money-making perspective,
I think. I agree. I think one of the things that isn't really been taken into account is I strongly think this is going to work through the same wallet, the same, you know, your Surair wallet is going to be the same that you use for the football or the baseball. And that's going to be a big thing, I think, because if you are sitting there in America and you've built your baseball team and you've got everything set up and you've still got a spare 0.2 ETH or a spare 0.1 ETH, what's this football thing or this soccer thing or whatever? And they go over and have a look at it, and all of a sudden, all these new members that are playing on, you know, the baseball side of things can come over, and it creates new members, which creates more demand for cards, and it creates, you know, a bit of a price rush. And it happens, you know, and it's, I mean, as you touched on, they brought in people and there was somebody from DraftKings. DraftKings is enormous. And I think if you think our gambling, industry in the UK is big, you don't know how big the fantasy sports. I've said it so many times, it probably boring people. Go and research it and have a look and see how big the fantasy sports market is. And you'll understand why they are diversifying. And it makes sense to diversify. And it's probably, if you're looking at it as a portfolio, you know, it de-risks to an extent, you know, go looking across the markets. If you've got, you know, your finger in six different sports, all of a sudden the risk element of something going away isn't quite as harsh, because if one thing doesn't work out, okay, we can refocus back into the other one. So I think it's a not bad thing. The one thing I'm going to kind of just switch to from the baseball is there's been a lot of chat. There was obviously a survey that was sent out. I seen it, didn't fill it in because I just didn't have the time to do it. But it was one that was asking managers what they thought of introducing women's team cards into Surair. Now, I've seen a lot of kind of pushback and things like that on it. And, you know, it's one of these subjects that some people feel that they can't talk about because, oh my God, I'm going to sound sexist, or, oh my God, I can't, you know, you've got to be inclusive and all these kind of things. Now, if it came in as a standalone, because I've seen one comparison, people were saying, oh, they introduced legends to the game. And obviously all the legend cards are scoring really high because that's the way they're designed. But they're not included in your everyday SO5. They've got their own competitions, their own SO5 leagues. And I think for me, looking at it from the outside in, if I look at I went on and had a look at the recent scores in the English, you know, the Women's Soccer League or the WSL, the score lines in those games, you're looking at 7-0, 5-0, 6-0, 4-0. It's not competitive across the board. And if you're going to suddenly introduce, you know, if they were to introduce Chelsea, Man City, Arsenal, all of a sudden you're going to introduce cards that are scoring 100 points every single game. And it's just going to be like that. And if you think that's, you know, the case just now with some of the Ajax ones or Celtic and, you know, Rangers eventually when they come in, it can't come into the same SO5. It could come in and be, you know, in like the way that the legend ones are. But for me, it can't come in and mix. You can't mix the sports, you can't mix the games. I don't see any way that you could introduce, unless it was a competitive league. I mean, up here in Scotland, I mean, the score lines are worse than that. You know, you're seeing 12s and 13s. You know, there's no competition in it at all. There's two teams. If you think, you know, the Scottish men's league is bad, you've no idea. So I don't see how they can introduce it without it being a competitive league. And it's going to sound sexist, and it's not intended to. You know, I've got a daughter on the way. I hope she's a footballer. Do you know what I mean? And I hope they have the opportunity to go and play, you know, as much football and games as they want. I know my son wants to teach her how to play football already. So it's just not at the top end to the bottom end of that league. It's not a competitive league. And I don't see how you can have a team scoring 7 goals every other week being introduced into the same SO5s. I just don't see how it's possible. I could see it as, you know, as a mixed league, if you want to call it the way that the challenger, the Legends leagues are set up. I could see it being something like that, but I don't see it any other way. I don't know how you feel about it. I know it's one of those push button kind of.
Yeah, do you know what? It's like everything else. I'd rather we covered things like this in the pod rather than avoiding them. I think that's the idea, is that as the pod develops, we've already had a few ideas that we've kind of maybe potentially put on hold just while we develop the audience, being honest. But, you know, we want to touch on things that people or the mainstream, you know, don't touch on. And we want to be different in the fact that we do. But, yeah, I agree. I don't want to see the women's cards being mixed in, you know, so that I'm putting in my champion Europe, I'm putting in, you know, Immobile, and I'm putting in Kimmich, and I'm putting in Solar, and then I'm putting in Erin Cuthbert. Do you know what I mean? Getting 100. And, yeah, it's just, you know, for me, it's fundamentally wrong. It's two completely different sports. You know, I think it's only right that we keep things separate. You know, if the reality of it is, if we're not mixing in real world football, you know, so Chelsea women aren't, you know, trying to get into the English Football League structure through the National League or whatever, then why would we be doing it on Surrey? That's just, you know, it's just, it would be ridiculous for me. But in a standalone competition, now, you know, it would probably be a lot more active given the fact that they've got, you know, there's a full calendar there, and you know, there's a full league structure, et cetera, there, and there's, you know, certainly plenty of players. For me, if it's held in its own right and it's an addition to the game rather than mixing it into what we already have, then I've absolutely no issue with it. Will I play it? Probably. So it's one of those things that it's quite interesting, and I know that obviously ladies football is certainly still in a growth and development stage, which is great for the game. I know that they're certainly getting bigger crowds. You know, you're seeing all the latest international round of matches there. It was, you know, records in Ireland and England, and I think Scotland had a wee bit of an increase in attendance as well. I'm not adverse to it being in our Surrey. However, I would still feel that, you know, should we be looking to introduce, the women's game before we've got, say, the English Championship and the Premiership? You know, we're not sitting with the full Portuguese league yet. You know, there's other leagues that could potentially be added. I think Surrey's got a few challenges ahead. You know, there's been lots of people publicly in social media have mentioned, and quite rightly so, the Challenger League is just expanding. You know, they've made their bed with the Champion League in the fact that it's your five leagues, but the Challenger keeps expanding, and it's getting harder and harder and taking more and more points to get near the bloody top of it. If they bring out new competition with the ladies, and then it's maybe seen that they're neglecting the, you know, Portuguese league, that should be fully rolled out, in my opinion. Do you know what I mean? It's such a good start having the three teams in there. That would be great. You've also got, you know, the rest of the Swiss league, that would be, that, you know, there's some very capable teams in there. And then you've got Scandinavia, which is a great market there. You know, lots of other sports are trying to take away from the sort of traditional winter sports, to take away the fan base and things. You know what I mean? You know, some of the sort of, let's say, the more sort of pub sports, you know, darts and snooker and pool and things like that. They're trying to expand their markets there and having tournaments there and things for, you know, in real life. So, you know, there's no reason, you've got teams like, you know, Rosenberg and Gothenburg and, you know, Norrköping and Djurgårdens and all these teams that are, you know, they're in European competition more often than not. Malmo, these would all be great. You know, I'm sitting with a Jordan Larson card at the moment, and I know that there's many of us have got him, and we're all sitting praying that, you know, somehow Postecoglou finds a route for him to, you know, to partner Furuhashi up front next season, and, you know, Giacomacus, sell him back to Netherlands or something, please. You know, no, just all joking aside, you know, there's other leagues and things like that that we've got to look at. So.
I mean, I see it as a kind of standalone kind of, you know, as I say, like the Legends League, basically, is probably where I would see it being. And I mean, if it was, you know, if it comes along and it's in that form, I would be looking to try and pick up some of the cards as well. What those cards come in at, if they're all scoring hundreds and things like that, it's going to be an expensive part to pick up. And just looking at, you know, the expansion, obviously you just mentioned there about the Scandinavian leagues. Obviously that would give, you know, a full summer of football for the European leagues if that was, you know, if they were to be added to it, because obviously they're a, you know, a summer league. So that would give you a bit more utility over the summer there as well. And I know what you're saying in terms of, obviously, I think there's been talk about people suggesting that they split Challenger into certain lineups. But I think, to be honest, I'm not sure that you could do that, because all that will probably happen is it's just going to end up, people will just buy more cards from those leagues. So you'll still see the Wales will still pick up, you know, the top places and all those ones. So, yeah, I think their main thing they have to look at doing is probably the reward system and seeing if they can balance it out that way. That's probably the only way. I mean, in terms of expansion, I don't know if you've seen it, that they just added the Ecuadorian league. It made me think of the Sash song, Ecuador. Every time I see the team name Ecuador, I just want to break into tune and start dancing like it's the mid-90s. But yeah, Ecuador have been added. And now that might be another one. Obviously, they added the Peruvian league. But then you keep seeing in the Discord chat that there's, you know, issues with opti-scoring possibly for this game week or for that game or for this game. So does that open up the floodgates for that happening again in Ecuador? So for me, I'm taking a wait-and-see approach with those players, just because I think, you know, I don't want to end up with players that might not be usable all the time, because all of a sudden there's a game that's not going to be scored. So that was one new one. I did see kind of something on Twitter where somebody had posted up a screenshot of one of the Polish team's players, where all of a sudden they were shown as having fixtures against them. And apparently that's the way that that happened with the Croatian league. So that could be one. And again, that'd be one that'd be great for doing a proper scouting session on. You know, you could really dig deep like I did with Austria and Turkey. You'd probably dig deep and you'd find some real gems in there. So that was the kind of severe news side of things. I don't know if there was any other Surreal news side of things that you'd kind of picked up on at all, Russ?
Not really, as I say. I noticed the team from Ecuador, and like that, obviously we've had Peru and Chile just over the last sort of month or so with them basically just introducing teams in. But yeah, not too much else new, I don't think, from the actual Surreal news.
No, that's fair play. I mean, the only other thing I was going to touch on before we kind of did our little kind of roundup of the Scottish news, we're actually recording this ahead of the Rangers and Frankfurt game. So if you don't hear any discussion of that in here, that's why. It's not an anti-Old Firm thing. It's just the game's not been played yet. So the one thing I was going to bring up, kind of briefly touched on it last week, and that was kind of obviously the fact that the ETH value has dropped. The whole crypto market dropped on the basis of one cryptocurrency collapsing. And it has had a big knock-on effect. But what I have noticed in the last week since we recorded is the gallery value, in terms of what the Surreal data value is showing as in terms of ETH, has increased from, I was sitting at like 1.5 or 1.46 or something like that, and I'm now sitting at 1.8. So as you'll see, as we talked about last week, the vast majority of players who've been around for any length of time are valuing their players in what's known as fiat, which is your pound, your euro, or your dollars. And it brings everything back round again. So it does take a little bit of time for that to balance out. But if you're panicking about the ETH value of your club, I said it last week, don't. You know, you will start to see things balance back out in fiat. I know that obviously that's something you harped on to me at the beginning of my Surreal journey, Russ, was the fact that it's fiat that you need to look at.
Yeah, it's just, again, it's one of those things, and I've seen it debated over Twitter so much. You know, for me,
we've got an intruder. Russ's pup is coming in to see him. we're recording early tonight, folks, because we are, the game is on in it's actually half an hour from now when we're recording. So normally we record about 8 o'clock, half past eight. This week we had to record a little bit early. So we've not got our usual peace and quiet. And Russ's dog keeps running in the room. So if you hear any background noise, that's all it is. It's, you know, we've got lives. We're not sitting in, you know, fancy studios or anything like that. I'm sat in my son's bedroom because he's got a green wall. And when I do my recordings, I've got my background against me. So that's, you know, this is the nature of the beast. Sometimes you will hear background noise, and it's, you know, and especially in 2 months' time, you might hear some wailing in the background because I'll have a newborn. So we better get used to it, folks. So yeah,
he's
sorry,
Russ. Now. He's caged now. Yeah, the dog is misbehaving badly. It's it's a bit mousy today, so it's just a puppy. However, it's gotten in the way a little bit. However, he's been banished for now. But no, going back to the East versus Fiat, I've mentioned it from day one of being on the platform. For me, Fiat is the extraction currency. We mentioned it last week. You can't go and buy your shopping, pay your gas, your electricity. Unless you're buying a Tesla, you can't buy a car with it. For me, anybody, again, I'll just be blatant and say it how it is. People that say they value purely an ETH, to me, I don't believe it. Fiat is the currency that we're all using. We've just seen an example there last week that ETH was trading at around about, I think, what was it, 2,000 for one ETH, £2,000. Then ETH tanked. I think it actually tanked whilst we were on the pod last week, down to 1.6. Now, the people that had, say, player listed at one ETH, you're not telling me that from the drop of £2,000 to £1,600 in the space of 6 to 8 hours, you're not telling me if I offered them 1.1 for that exact same player they were wanting £2,000 for, that they would accept even 0.1 more of an ETH for the same player. Of course they wouldn't. They're all relisted. You see it all the time. When ETH drops, all you see is the entire market relisting at a higher ETH price. So to say that you are valuing in ETH and purely only ETH, that's just nonsense. You know, and I don't believe it, and I'll call anybody out and I'll challenge anybody all day long on the fact that we work in the money that we want to extract at some point. Now, it's like everything else. So there was, I've sold a lot of players over the weekend. I've had about 15 sales. At one point, I think I had over an ETH in the, you know, in the bank here as such. And I decided, you know, am I going to extract it? No, because the ETH, the sort of the conversion rate is so poor. So I've reinvested it in players. Now, like everything else, I'm still sitting with an ETH balance. And I'm looking at it today, even though ETH's obviously been sort of quite volatile over the last week or so.
Yeah,
and am I thinking of extracting it into UK pounds and pence? Of course I'm not, because it's so low. However, if it was sitting at one ETH is trading at £3,000 right now, then that's a different conversation and that's a different thought process. But it also means that the player that you're sitting at, you know, say take someone like Lawrence Shankland right now. You know, he's been relegated with Beerschot. He's been told he's probably, you know, realistically free to head back to Scotland or the English Championship or wherever he ends up. Now, he was trading at round about 0.08 ETH. You know, now, if ETH rockets back up to, you know, three grand instead of the 1,600, you'll not have to pay 0.08 to get him. Now, obviously, if he does move, his value is going to go up. But even say he becomes a 0.1 striker, then he's not. You're going to get him for like 0.5 or 0.6 because it's still the same value of 250 quid for your European striker. So, you know, I think this is a big thing. And I think it's quite off-putting for people that they learn about Surrey. You know, I had the conversation last week at the kids' football, and I was speaking to a former pro, actually, who was just learning a little bit about the game, and I was just showing him a little bit on the phone and talking to him about it. But the one thing that the guys just couldn't get their head around was the crypto conversion. So they understand the players, they understand they've all got values, they understand the scarcity, but it's when you then mention the, you know, the crypto side of things, and that's when things can get a little bit hazy, a little bit grey, and then people are starting to get a little bit confused. And I think it's still the one that sort of the main biggest challenge, and that's why I've not got You know, I think I said last week, I think I've probably got about 20 to 25 people that have signed up for this game. I genuinely believe if I was only dealing in, you know, whether it was dollars, euros and pounds or whatever, but say that, if, for example, for me, if the crypto element wasn't in there, for me, I would have, I genuinely would have 250 to 300 people signed up for this game, because there would be nothing that casts the doubt, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's like that with guys at work. It's one of the things you have to try and overcome is when, you know, when, because we all sell it to our friends, don't we? You know, you kind of, you speak to your work colleague, you tell them about it and they're like, oh, what's this thing that you always post about? And you tell them and you explain it to them, but they just don't get it, because it's, as soon as you start mentioning crypto or Ethereum, it does, it throws people off. And I'm like, do you know what? You're buying in pounds and pence. You know, if you say to me, how much do I put in? I'm not saying, oh, you're going to put in 0.5 of an ETH. I'm saying you're going to put in 300-400 quid. Do you know what I mean? That's the way, you know, you speak to people. And I get bored, to be perfectly honest, when I see the ETH versus fiat discussion, because there's only one right answer. And I'm sorry, and I agree with what Russ has just said. There is only one right answer. And if you think otherwise, you're wrong. You know, and I'm sorry, I don't really, you know, I've got no other way to say that. You're wrong. It's just a fact. You know, as you know, we all put our money in. Now, there are times, this is the converse thing. When ETH starts to shoot back up again, you will start to see people's price changes are a wee bit slower at that point, because they're like, well, it was 0.1 yesterday, so it must be 0.1 today. And you're like, yeah, it was 200 quid yesterday. Now it's 300 quid. There's no difference in give and take. It takes time for things to level out, and it always does. And the ones you'll see that it levels out from the first are the guys that have been around for a longer time. It's the guys that have been from 2020, from early 2021, that have been through ups and downs in terms of ETH value. That's where, because that's where I panicked last year, last May. I panicked, and I was actually, and I think I said this on one of the early podcasts, I've certainly said it in my videos, I had sleepless nights when ETH crashed last May. It was sitting at $3,000, and all of a sudden it was down in the 1200s. And I genuinely was having sleepless nights about it, because I was like, God, all my hard work. At that point, I'd gone from 300 quid to 1300 quid. And I was like, all my hard work is just gone. And I was waking up with sweats and everything, 3 o'clock in the morning. And I'm checking to see what ETH's sitting at in value. And you kept telling me, fucking chill out. You know, there's nothing to worry about. But in my head, I couldn't get around that, because I was still thinking in the ETH value. And then sure enough, as the week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks went on, you start to see the market correct itself. And it's a market correction. And as you say, I mean, if ETH was to continue dropping and it's 500 quid for one ETH, you're not telling me I can go and buy a Kylian Mbappe for 700 quid. I can't. I can't do it. And I'm talking about the limits, because I just seen something, Underdog winner won a Kylian Mbappe and it was 1.3 ETH. So if you're going to tell me I could buy him for 700 quid if ETH drops to 500, fucking bring it on. Bring on the crash. And I mean, I'll be looking to buy him at that point, but it's just lunacy to say otherwise. And if you own a Kylian Mbappe and you're willing to drop his price from, you know, over $2,500 to 700 quid because ETH value drops, good on you.
Get in touch.
I've got a car to sell you. So we'll move on from that discussion into a little bit of Scottish news. We kind of have, this has become our trademark, and we're both getting asked on a constant basis about this player, that player. And do you know what? I love it. Bring it. You know, if you've got any questions, DM either one of us. Both DM the podcast account, because we've both got access to that, so we can speak to you on there as well. And that's at AVFTDpod. And you know, we'll happily take your questions and discuss it. And sometimes if you do it on there, it's going to be both of us answering you. So you might get, you know, two birds and one stone there. So recently, Scottish news, obviously the league finished last Sunday. It basically finished, you know, as of last week when we were recording. And obviously Dundee were relegated. So any Dundee players, I think I posted up today, there was an article in the local paper of who was out of contract. And the only one player I see being out of contract and moving back into the Premier League was Danny Mullen. I think I've said that right in the podcast. Obviously, he was linked with Dundee United at one point. That was kind of local kind of talk, you know, the word on the pavey, as they would say locally. And it was, there's not been any more to that, but he's rejected a contract at Dundee. He is going to be moving. He is a Premier League caliber player. He's got 7 Premier League goals in a struggling team with the right service. And that was missing a few months as well. So he's got, with the right service, he's a very capable player. He's the only one I would see out of that. Looking at Dundee United, Russ, obviously there was the Swiss embassy was the one that kind of broke the news that Benjamin Sigrist was leaving. He'd visited them yesterday and he was talking about his future career plans. So it was like, okay, embassy jumped the gun with Dundee United not having announced it, but we knew that was the case. It's been on the card for months. And obviously there's a couple others there if you want to talk through those guys.
It's no secret, you know. Benji Sigrist has been a really great performer for us for a couple of seasons now. He went slightly off the boil there at the end of the season, but I'm guessing he had probably a lot on his mind in relation to, you know, I know, as far as I know, he was offered obviously new terms at United. However, there's been lots and lots of rumours from, you know, from as far away as Manchester, apparently, as a third option or a third choice keeper to a little bit closer to home, you know, down in Glasgow, where, you know, he's seen as possibly a very capable number two. I wouldn't have thought he would be earmarked for number one.
I had seen a rumour today that was talking Aberdeen.
And well,
I thought that was slightly out of left field because, obviously, United have got European football. And Aberdeen are 10th and barely, you know, had one result gone differently, Aberdeen could have been in the playoffs. So, frying pan fire there would kind of be the...
I personally don't see that move certainly happening. You know, my own thoughts around it, and, you know, I'd like to think that, you know, I've got a few close friends sometimes in football that can give me some decent information, and, you know, I've thought for quite some time on the authority that I've been given that Xander Clark would replace Benji Sigrist at Dundee United when he leaves St Johnstone. And I still firmly believe that's the case. I'm happy to publicly put that on record that I think Xander Clark will be the Dundee United goalkeeper now that Benji has indeed... you know, I think there was an element of, after the Swiss embassy put that, the United media team must have got together last night and went, shit, we've got to put out something tomorrow. And along with Sigrist, The loanees are announced as departing, which is Dylan Levitt, obviously of Manchester United. So he has departed Dundee United now officially. We've got Kevin McDonald, that was ex-Dundee, of course, and down at Fulham, and obviously had his kidney problems and things like that in relation to surgery and stuff. And great to see him coming back and playing. I thought he would get an extension of a deal, to be honest with you. I think he lacked maybe a little bit of mobility, but he looked good on the ball when I seen him. I only seen him in the flesh 3 times this season. But yeah, I thought he looked okay. And I thought he might have got maybe another 6 months to maybe prove himself. However, he has not been renewed.
I could see him being one that stays in the city.
Maybe
with potential coaching opportunities across the road. Because obviously that's happened with players that were in his same group that came through the Dundee Academy, like Scott Robertson, played across the road. He's in charge of an academy. Well, not in charge of the academy, but he's one of the guys at the academy. And could see him possibly staying.
Other guys have played for both. So, the other one we had, the Kosovoan international, he'd just broken into their team there, Florent Hoti. To be fair, didn't really make a mark on the sort of first team picture as such. However, there is a card in Surrey for him. So, you know, again, he is now out of contract. We've also got Adrian Sporla, the Argentinian sort of left back come left wing back. There was a little bit of talk, and I, to be honest, I was really excited when we signed him. I thought we were getting some sort of amazing sort of Argentinian skilled player. And obviously, our city's got quite a bit of history with Argentinians. I'll very briefly mention Caniggia, but you're not allowed to talk any further of it. However, he was not at my team, he was at yours.
Never out the Donny shop.
However, I thought to myself, you know, Sporla would have been probably better than he was. Don't get me wrong, he had a few good games for United, but again, nothing overly memorable in my opinion. So we're now in the position where we will be looking to acquire 3 or 4 players, and I've got a little video that's almost finished. Certainly the PowerPoint's finished for the sort of Dundee United incomings and outgoings that'll be kind of popping on YouTube. But there's a few mentions. I noticed that Aberdeen had also released their squad retention list. I don't know if you've seen that one.
Yeah, I've got that one here. Obviously, the loanees that were going out were Adam Montgomery going back to Celtic, and Teddy Jenks was going back down south. And the four players that they announced were all leaving at the end of their contract were one that you brought up early doors was Andrew Considine, Boogie Boy, as we referred to him as. And obviously, there's talk of multiple clubs still being interested. He made the team of the week this week, interestingly, for Aberdeen, and he only played the first half. But interestingly, he made the team of the week. And Dylan McGeoch was another one. Funsu Ojo, maybe slight surprise maybe that one. But the one that did kind of catch me a little bit by surprise was Michael Ruth. They only just gave him a game two games ago, young striker, and out the door. So that was maybe a slight surprise with him going, because to be honest, I was starting to look at him, because I've got Conor McLean in there, and I was like, well, maybe if I pick up, and then boom, there he goes out the door. So it's amazing how quick things can change. So it's kind of staying ahead of the curve with some of those ones, eh?
Yeah, and I covered the Aberdeen team just on a YouTube video just last week, and one of the ones I'd actually looked and I put on the video, and if MB was just to watch it back, I kind of go through all the players, and Michael Ruth was one that I thought would be released. He's had a couple of loan spells and things, and I found it bizarre the fact that, other than the fact that Ramirez obviously wasn't an option to select, but I found it quite bizarre that you got the last couple of games of the season there, and then was obviously just jettisoned the next day. I was like, right, okay, a bit bizarre, but hey ho. But yeah, that's the sort of the squad sort of retention lists that I've got at the moment.
The other two that I've got were St Mirren, who are one that I'm quite intrigued by for next season. Obviously, I've got like Mark O'Hara signed a pre-contract for them. They've signed a new striker. I was actually looking at Curtis Main as maybe an option, but I changed my mind when I had a wee look and seen, obviously, they've signed a new striker there and stuff like that as well. So the ones that they've made offers to Alec Gogic and to Fraser Taylor, but leaving the club, they had quite a few leaving the club. Alan Power, he's a card in the game. Kyle McAllister, I'm not sure if he does have a card in the game. I don't think he does. Conor McCarthy, another one, I'm not sure that he's got a card in the game. He does have a card in the game. Yeah. He's left them, but that was a surprise one to a lot of St Mirren fans from what I've been reading. So, he might pop up at another Premier League team, possibly another one wearing white and blue stripes this time, perhaps. Maybe a move over to Kilmarnock as an option there.
Or a move north to Pittodrie, following Mr. Goodwin.
Or a move north to Pittodrie as well. So there is scope for there. Ross County was another one. They announced all their loanees were leaving. And that was quite a few of these cards players have got cards, like Jake Vokins, Hungbo was another one. Mm-hmm. And Ashley Maynard. He'd left a couple of weeks ago anyway. They also released Blair Spittle, which was a surprise one, slightly.
I think he just didn't sign, wasn't it? I think he just, rather than being released, I'm sure he rejected the terms.
Yeah, I think it was one of those things where he's kind of, so I would expect him to pop up another Premier League team, probably. Yeah. And again, that could be the likes of a St Mirren or a Killy or a team. Killy, whilst they got promoted, they didn't get promoted by a million miles. They got promoted just over a part-time team. So they've got a fair bit of strengthening still to do there at Killy.
We might see a few players for Livy. Could Blair Spittle perhaps maybe arrive at Livy for Alan Forrest?
That could be another one that looks like, there's a few players at Livy that they've kind of mentioned, but I don't think they've announced an official, released list there. But they have brought in a couple of players already. So there are teams that are making moves already. And I think, Alan Forrest, I mean, he came off the bench and he won Livingston the game at the weekend because nobody else really cared. And he came off the bench and he scored and got an assist and was very likely to be his last game at the club. So, I think it'll be very interesting to see. Keep an eye on the next few weeks. You might see some of the surges in prices when players do sign for other clubs. There's some players that are so cheap just now. Couple of gate players, like Ross McCrory that I picked up, he's missed a couple of games because of he got suspended and then he had a concussion. So his scores look really low. But I think I seen him earlier on the market for 0.025. That's less than 40 quid. That's extraordinary for a player like that. So I don't think he might be there. I think Russ might pick one up before, possibly before this podcast appears. But that was one. And, you know, so there's some really good value. I'll touch on that in my three players to watch. But that was kind of my Scottish news. I don't know if you've got anything to really add to that.
No, not really. Just basically just a few players to watch. And before we do, I'm hoping that you've remembered.
I have.
The challenge I set you last week.
I have. So this week, I believe I have three players who you could find their names or something to do with them ordered in a restaurant.
Mm-hmm. That was it. What have you got?
So brace yourself. These are bad boys. So I'm going to go with the rubbish one first. This was actually my third one because I was kind of starting to struggle a wee bit because I'd found some during the day and then forgot them. I've had a bad day. So the first one, I thought of a dessert. So if you're looking at the dessert menu, maybe you'd want some sort of, you know, a mousse à Dembélé. So I'm taking it and I don't care. He also plays for Lyon, so you could also get a Lion bar as well. I don't really know which one of those two you want to pick, but I'm going with that one. The next one, and I'm keeping, I've got a favourite one, I'm going to keep that to last. So the next one is a lad that plays for Stade de Reims in France, and that was Nicolas Penny. Because obviously you're going to get some pasta, so you might want some penny pasta. So Penny Toe was the one that I picked from there. And the last one, Russ, you're going to appreciate this one. This lad used to play for Kortrijk. I believe he's got 15 rare cards in the game. And it's Elohim Roland Sausage. So that was the one I went for there, was Roland, and it's R-O-L-L-A-N-D. So Roland, and I put in brackets after his name, Sausage. So a Roland Sausage, square sausage for those West Coasters. That's the easiest way. If you want to do a Glaswegian accent, just say square sausage, and that's you turned into a Glaswegian automatically.
Well, that's...
Yeah, that's those.
Well, I have to say, fair effort. The only other one I'd seen, and it was a chap called Ruslan Fishchenko, which sounds so...
That was my one from earlier in the day that I couldn't bloody remember.
So before we go on to the very, very finale, just with a couple of players before we let everybody's ears get a rest, challenge for next week.
Yep.
I want five names.
Five?
Five, yeah, I do. I want five because this is easier. I want five names in-game.
Yeah.
We've got to have cards. Mm-hmm. You could expect to be extras in an adult movie.
My goodness. My goodness.
You're heading to Korea. I just know it. I'm just
I could easily do it through Korea. Okay, fair enough. I'll go with that. Could be entertaining.
However, I want at least one that's not from the K-League. Just to piss you off.
So no bum youngs for all five, but we'll find...
absolutely. On that note, what players have you got to either look out for Faith or that are coming up in the game week or just basically that you think that we'll maybe be able to make a little bit of money off over the next sort of 4 to 6 weeks?
That's what I've gone with. I've gone with players that you can make. So I've gone with, another twist on things. I've gone with a few players that you could pick up. These were ones... I actually wrote this list out for myself and I was working through it. It's a few players that you could pick up. These are all Scottish cards because, to be honest, it's been a busy week and I've had quite a lot on. So I've went with a few cards that you could pick up. These were all sub 0.03. So at the minute, that's about, you know, sub 50 quid you could pick these lads up for. And I was looking at kind of 3 or 7 day averages on them. So the first one that I picked up, one that you've got in your gallery, very close to home for you. He's also contracted for another year, and that is Charlie Mulgrew. His last five was sitting at 58 and his last 15 was 51. And you were picking him up for under 0.02 yesterday. So it's one that you could probably have a look at. Auctions are probably where you're going to find these the cheapest, but you might find some of them on the market quite cheaply. The next one I'm going to mention is Declan Gallagher, another player that we've both mentioned. And his last five has been 50, last 15 of 42. Now, you're going to have to keep an eye on him because they could look at replacing him in terms of if they do bring in extra defenders. But I have a feeling he'll be okay because Jim Goodwin seems to be, you know, his main, you know, him and Bates have been the two main centre-backs that they used. And he's sitting at 0.021 was his average price for the last 7 days. And my final one, I'm going to go one that's very out there and it's only 10 quid. in terms of his average price, and that is Scott Allen of Hibs, soon to not be of Hibs. His contract is up. It'll depend on the new manager incoming. That was another thing we kind of could have touched on. Looks like it's going to be Lee Johnson's coming in for them. But Scott Allen, he was heavily, heavily linked to both Dundee and Kilmarnock in January, and he was very close to joining Kilmarnock, but for one reason or another, it didn't go through. So that might be one that ends up at a Kilmarnock, and for the sake of 10 quid for a rare card, you could possibly get a very creative player. And on his day, sometimes, you know, on his day a couple of years ago, he could be untouchable on the field. And but yeah, I think for 10 quid, that's one that's maybe worth having a wee look at. So I'm only going with the three this week, Russ, and I will pass it over to you for your selection of goodies.
Yeah, I've got three. I'll be honest, all three are in my gallery as recent acquisitions. Like I said, I think on the trading element that I like to look at the lineups, look at the young players that are breaking through, and then look around the sort of rare scores and things around them. I've got three. They're all from the Americas and specifically the MLS. So number one, and he's coming in at round about 0.04 ETH on the market, is Luke Hackinson. Plays sort of left wing, left mid, but he's a forward card. Now, there is a forward and a midfield card in the game. However, I think as he's currently still got the under-23 status at the moment. He's at Nashville. I think it's a relatively decent pickup with a relatively low amount of risk. He's been coming off the bench predominantly, but he set up a goal there at the weekend. So yeah, I think there's a little bit of scope to maybe make a little bit of money on him. I'm not thinking it's going to be like a trebler or a times five or anything, but you might be able to double your money with a couple of starts. The second player I have is a player at Atlanta, and that is Franco Ibarra, who has just broken the team. He's playing in the sort of defensive midfield sort of role. Looks good. I've been kind of following him for probably about 2 months, waiting for him to get some game time.
Has he not seen you yet?
yeah, he's. I've been waiting.
At the door soon.
However, yeah, Franco Ibarra, he's not quite as cheap. I think I picked him up at 0.055, sort of about 48 hours ago. He's probably up a little bit more now, but I think he's going to be quite good. And the final one, obviously we've got Austin Trusty leaving Colorado Rapids, and his apparent heir to the throne is a chap called Gustavo, and I apologize if I butcher this, but I think it's Valasila that you pronounce it. Again, you're able to pick him up for 0.04. He is bound to get an opportunity to replace Trusty. I did read an article say that they probably don't feel that he's got that kind of same relationship with Wilson and Akubakar and Keegan Rosenberry that sort of the Trusty's had. Yeah. But I think they're going to give him a chance and give him an opportunity. So have a look at him. Again, I don't think there's much to lose on that. I can't really see him going backwards in price. So again, a few more starts, a few more games, a few green scores, and then who knows. So that's the three that I have got this week.
So yeah, a mixture there. So obviously I've got players that you're kind of going to probably look at getting a return on over the next 4 to 6 weeks. And Russ has obviously given you cards that could potentially, you know, obviously there's MLS games tonight, there's obviously games at the weekend, and these are players that are going to be playing through the summer. So if you can, have a look at those. You can also look at the limited versions as well, because it's all relative. If you're spending a quid on a card and you make £4 back, you've made four times your profit. So, I don't think I've got anything else to add this week. I look forward to finding my five adult style names, which is, you know, we've sandwiched it with adult entertainment with your helicoptering at the start of the video, or the start of the podcast, sorry, on his Britain's Got Talent audition video. And we're sandwiching it with, five adult stars at the end. So without further ado, I will let you all go. Actually, one thing before we go, because this podcast is going to come out after the Eintracht and Rangers game. On the spot, Russ, scoreline.
Rangers, I think. I hope Rangers win for the Scotland coefficient.
Yep.
So good luck to Rangers. Obviously, we've got some Rangers fans listening to the pod. I hope you enjoy your night. For the goodness of Scottish football and the coefficient and the Champions League places, happy for Rangers to win tonight, but don't want to hear too much about it. However, I think Rangers have maybe just got enough in the tank. 2-1, but I do believe we'll have a Japanese goal scorer for Frankfurt. There you go. There's my prediction.
There you go. There's your tip for to get on. Oh, actually, it's too late for a tip. 2-1's my scoreline as well for Rangers. So, again, you know, hopefully I can tell you all to stay safe and behave, but, you know, we're above telling you all to stay safe and don't do bad things, people. But anyhow, we will speak to you all again next week when we will have more nonsense and more carry on. Take care, guys, and we'll speak to you all again soon.